Now we're choosing subjects or sichas that don't just explain a pasuk or a rashi, but a sicha that has a universal message, something essential to Yiddishkeit, to life, to history. So I think this sicha, which we'll get to in a minute, does have a much broader application or meaning than simply explaining a pasuk or an event. We're waiting to get the rest of the world tuned in.
Yeah, hundreds of people, I think there were 1,000 people joined last week, our Bereishis class, from around the world, all different countries. So, just a second.
No pressure.
Questions about Precious Nights that we can address before we start, or you don't want to?
Can I ask a question? We were discussing about the generations of Nayak specifically, whatever, just before, like, what were they expected to do or not do if they didn't have the Yates or Tiber or Nefeshali Kiss, or did they, or were they weren't Jews and we got those after Carcina, which was thousands of years later. So what were they expected to do? Like, why were they so punished and such a shock that they were committing such a crime?
And what did the people in Sodom? Did they have
another good example.
Yeah,
and
just
even Cain, like, that he came out, like, and he killed his brother and he got punished, whatever. Like, this evil that happens in the world,
what makes you think they didn't have a Yetzer Tov?
Because we got ours at the same
time. Really?
Or shock me.
So Avraham and Yitzchak, they didn't have.
Whatever.
Well, obviously there's a difference between a Yetzer Tov and a Nefesh HaLikis.
Yes, definitely.
So Yetzer Tov they certainly had. Because if you have a Yetzer Hara, you have to have a Yetzer Tov.
Yeah.
And that's why they can be held responsible for the mitzvahs that they were given.
They were given mitzvahs?
Six mitzvahs were given to Adam and Chava. Only one was added in the time of Noach, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I want to point out something. What was the story with Adam and Chava? There was a tree, they ate from a tree. What did they get from eating from this tree? They became wiser. Yes? It was a tree of knowledge, right? It was an Eitz Hadas. So they gained some kind of das.
Didn't they gain subjectivity?
Which is a good thing?
Mm-hmm. If your self is in line with, like, God's perspective,
so the tree of knowledge, Eitz Hadas Teivara. This das is good and bad. It's the best of things and it's the worst of things. To have an identity, to have a self, is the best thing in the world. And it's the worst thing in the world. Having a self makes it possible to connect with another person. I give myself to you. But having a self makes me not want to connect to another person, because I come first. So it's the best of things and it's the worst of things. And that's why Eitz Hadas Teva Ra doesn't mean it is the knowledge of good and evil. It is Das, and that's good and it's evil. It's the goodest and the evilest of all things. But the point is, without getting into too many details, the point is that they did something with a tree, the fruit of a tree, they ate from a tree, they were affected by the tree, it was good, it wasn't good. And then what happened after the mabul? What was the first thing that Noach did?
Planted a vineyard.
And? A tree, the fruit of a tree, a vine. Actually, there are some opinions that the Eitz Hadas was a vine. And that Noach was making Kiddush before Shabbos. Huh? So according to that opinion in the Gemara, all the trees were kosher, but not the grape. And by eating from the vine, by eating from the grape, whatever happened, happened. The good, the bad. So Noach, it seems, was simply repeating what Adam and Chava did. It needs to be plugged in. Huh? It only has 20%. Anyway. So before we get to the Sicha, just this observation that Noach was like starting the world all over again, and he felt that he needed to do what Adam and Chava did. And since they ate from a tree, trying to get to some deeper insight, Das, tree of knowledge, he also did the same, because the grape, the wine, we're told, Nichnas Yayin Teitze Seid. So the wine brings out the secrets. So he wanted to get to the secrets of creation, to the secrets of godliness, through the vine, but it also was a mixed effect. There was some good and there was some not good. Another thing about the Parsha, we're reading about the flood. What exactly was the flood? Why a flood? Oh, people were very bad. Why a flood? There's so many ways to punish. And then, of course, God promises that he'll never use a flood again. He can still use limited floods, but not to wipe out the entire... There were 1,000 years between Adam and Noah, right? That 1,000 years was a reflection of the first day of creation. The first day of creation was kindness. Each day was an emotion. Was a divine attribute. So the first day of creation God revealed kindness. He created light, which is kindness. But the light was too much. So God had to take it back and reserve it for the times of Mashiach. In the first 1,000 years, you had the dominance of kindness. It was a millennium that was pure kindness. And it was too much. Just like on the first day of creation, the kindness was too much, because kindness in general is indiscriminate by its nature. So it was too much. And the light had to be withdrawn. The same happened in the first 1,000 years of history, that it was too much. People lived too long. Animals got to be too big. It was too much. And at the end of the 1,000 years, it was withdrawn. Very suddenly, lifespan went from 1,000 years to 120, which is a drastic change. So if that was the first 1,000 years, Noach, from Noach till Avraham, was the second 1,000 years, and that millennium is a reflection of the second day of creation. And what happened on the second day of creation? God separated the waters. God used judgment, or gvura, to decide which water goes up, which water goes down. Separation in general is gvura, distinction. The waters that were left below were upset. They felt it was unjust. Why should they get to be down when the other waters got to be up? So we see that there was judgment expressed in water. The second millennium is a reflection of that gvura, and so the punishment was expressed again in water, just as on the second day the gvura was expressed in the separations of the water. So in a very real sense, the flood was not only a punishment for the sins of the people, but it was also a cleansing of the tumah that 1,000 years produced, so that the earth itself became unholy. So the 40 days and 40 nights of rain, that's like the 40 saw, the 40 measures of water that make up a mikveh. So why 40 days and 40 nights? Why 40 measures or volume of water? And it had to cover the highest mountain, just like when you go to the mikveh, you have to be completely covered by the water, immersed in the water. So the mabul was like taking the world to the mikveh. The result was that after the mabul, after the flood, the earth became healthier, more real, more stable. And that's why after the mabul, there was a rainbow. What causes a rainbow, scientifically? Huh? Yeah, the light is refracted in the atmosphere, and it breaks down into its various colors. But that didn't happen before the mabul, because the atmosphere was not firm enough to refract the light. So it wasn't a miracle that there was a rainbow, because that would be an unnecessary miracle, and God doesn't perform miracles unnecessarily. It was simply a new reality which represented the stability of the earth, which guarantees that there won't be another flood. Yeah.
What does it mean that the atmosphere doesn't form in?
I don't know. It's like if you shine a light through a piece of ice, you'll see the various colors. Mm-hmm. But if the ice was just vapor, it wouldn't have the same effect on the light.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
I don't know. Somehow the heavens were not solid, and after the flood they became solid. More substantial or something. So now let's get to the Sikha. The Mishnah says there were 10 generations from Adam till Noach, and they were bad, Machis and Uboyin. Every generation, all 10 of them, were bad, people were sinning, and they were not punished. Generation after generation, 10 of them, and they were not punished. What does this tell us? How patient God is. To show us how patient God is. But then, when Noach came around, they were punished. And the punishment was that they were simply eliminated from the face of the earth. Then the Mishnah says, the next 10 generations, from Noach until Avraham, were also evil, and they were not punished. They were punished in two ways: the flood and the dispersion when they were building the tower. What was wrong with building the tower? Why was that a sin? Why was God not pleased?
Because they were trying to fight with God.
At the very least, they were building the tower because they didn't believe that the flood or the Mabul came as a result of God's displeasure. They thought it was a natural occurrence. So they wanted to do something, either solidify, support the heavens, that they shouldn't fall down again, or they wanted to leave Earth, get out of Earth's atmosphere, and go to the moon, which would be safer. There are no floods on the moon. So they were scientifically very advanced, which we already know that there was a lot of wisdom that was lost. How they build the pyramids, we still can't figure out. How they able to mummify, to embalm a body to keep it relatively intact for thousands of years. We still don't know how they did it. So there was great information. Adam and Chava were geniuses. They knew everything. But the information was lost because it wasn't shared. Those who had the information wouldn't share it. Which is an old trick. You use knowledge as a power to control other people. So there are the haves and the have-nots. There are those who know and those who don't know, and it was part of the evil of that time. So the generation of the flood, the first 1,000 years, were punished with annihilation. The generation of the tower, the second 1,000 years, were punished with dispersion. All of a sudden they were talking different languages and they couldn't continue with their project. So the Rebbe asks, and then the Mishnah says, at the end of the second 1,000 years, Avraham came, that was the beginning of the good news, and he cashed in on all of the reward that the 10 generations didn't get. He got the reward for all 10 generations. So the Rebbe asks, two questions. First of all, why was the first millennium punished by annihilation, which is very severe, whereas the second, 10 generations that were evil, and they were punished with dispersion? They didn't die, they just went their separate ways. Not nearly as severe a punishment. And secondly, it says that after the 10 generations from Noach until Avraham, Avraham gathered or received a reward for all 10. Why didn't Noach, at the end of his 10 generations, receive the reward for all previous generations? Yes? You read the Sikha? That's the question. So the Rebbe explains. What was the sin of the first 10 generations? What was their evil? Their evil was that they didn't get along. They were terrible to each other. So ben adam l'chaveri, in terms of how people treated people, they were terrible. They had no question or no doubts about God. So between them and heaven, things were good. But between them and each other, in other words, how they treated earth, they were terrible. So their sins were destructive of society, destructive of life on earth. But they weren't doubtful. They had no questions about God. They believed in God. They didn't serve idols. That came later. Who was the first one to serve idols? Yes, it was in the second millennium. So their sin was against earth, so to speak, not against heaven. The second millennium, between man and man, things were good. They got along, they cooperated. In fact, the biggest problem was that they cooperated. How else could they build a tower to the moon? They were all equally excited about this one project, and they worked together. So obviously they were living in peace with each other. They all spoke the same language, they lived in the same area, and they were working on one project, which is kind of an amazingly good thing. But if the project was bad, it can be an awesomely bad thing. This project was bad. So what was their sin? Their sin was a lack of emunah. They didn't believe in God. They didn't believe the flood came from God. They didn't believe there's punishment. They had problems with heaven. They didn't have problems with earth. So ben adam l'chaveri, they were good, but between themselves and God, there was nothing. Which is a worse sin? You could argue between man and God is much worse. You start up with a person, you don't like people, you're not good to people, okay, you're also a people. But if you start up with God, that's got to be worse. And yet, the first 10 generations, the first millennium, when they didn't believe in God, when they believed in God but were not good to each other, they were punished with death. And the second 10 generations, the second millennium, when they're starting up with God but they're nice to each other, they get a lighter punishment? How come? So what the Rebbe answers, if you can look at the principle behind it, it's not a question of severe punishment or lesser punishment. That's not the point. The question is not who gets a bigger punishment. The question is, what is the nature of the punishment because it must fit the crime? So if the crime was that they started up with God, then it makes sense that they should not have a chelik in the Olam Haba. In other words, they should be banned from heaven. Started up with heaven, you don't get to go there. If you start up with earth, if you're not good to life on earth, then the appropriate punishment is you don't get to be on earth. So if you start up with heaven, you don't get heaven. If you start up with earth, you don't get earth. So it's not a question of death penalty versus a lesser penalty. It's an appropriate punishment for the sin. So what do we see from this? The second millennium, because they weren't good to each other, were not making earth holier. They were not fulfilling the primary purpose for which the world was created. The world was not created for heaven. Bereshis bara Elokim es ha-shamayim ve-es ha-oretz. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the rest of the Torah is about earth. Heaven is not mentioned again. So obviously, the main purpose of creation is not heaven, but earth. And that's why it follows logically that the ultimate reward, Olam Haba, is not in heaven, but on earth. Since the main project, the main purpose, the main goal was to make earth holy, when we do make earth holy, where should the reward be? Not in heaven, but on earth. So Olam Haba is not Gan Eden. Tchias HaMeisim means the bodies come back and the souls return to their bodies and leave heaven. So that's why the people in the second millennium who were making life on earth better, they deserve to stay on earth. The first 10 generations, the first millennium, because they were destroying life on earth, even though their emunah was good, but they didn't deserve to stay here. So they were removed from the earth. Poetic justice. So that explains why the first 10 generations were punished with death, and the second 10 generations only with being dispersed. The other question was, after the second millennium, Avraham received the reward of his millennium, of his 10 generations. Noach did not receive the reward for his 10 generations. And that's because Avraham fulfilled the purpose for which the world was created. So the people of the second millennium, because they were good to each other, deserved a reward. Why were they not rewarded for that?
Where do you see them good to each other besides Abraham and his followers?
Their sin was only that they didn't believe in God and therefore built the tower. But there was no crime against each other. They were working together. They got along well. So why were they not rewarded for that? The fact that their punishment was a lesser punishment, that's not a reward. So here's how it works. When you do a mitzvah and you release or reveal the godliness that exists in potential, in the world and in physical things and so on, the reward is first of all the appreciation, the tainug, the pleasure of that godliness that you have revealed. If you're not familiar with godliness, how do you enjoy the godliness you just created? So it's a pretty common thing. Every Jew is full of mitzvahs like a pomegranate is full of seeds. And yet they don't appreciate. Because if you're not aware, if you don't appreciate godliness, if you don't understand godliness, you're producing godliness with the mitzvahs you're doing, but you're not enjoying it because you don't understand godliness. So if you do a mitzvah without awareness of God, you are creating godliness, but you're not enjoying it because you don't even know that you're doing it. So if you do a mitzvah for an ulterior motive, if you study Torah because you want to be famous or you want to be respected, the study of Torah produces godliness, brings God into the world. But you don't know that because you're distracted with your own benefits, with your ulterior motive. So there is reward, but you're not getting it. And also in the physical, when you bring more godliness into the world, there's benefit even to the physical. But you don't get it if you're blocking the godliness from reaching you.
But does the world get it? Like, because it's bringing it down.
Yes. So that's what it means. Avraham came and he made the world better, teaching people kindness, feeding people. He was very good for the world, for earth. And he appreciated the godliness. Therefore, he was able to collect the reward that was sitting uncollected, like somebody who wins a lottery but doesn't have the ticket. So he came and he absorbed or benefited from all the godliness that 10 generations of people produced, and yet they couldn't cash it in, and he could. Whereas Noach, the 10 generations before him were not good for earth. They were only good for heaven. And so, on an earthy level, there was nothing to collect.
Why didn't they get rewarded for being good with God?
That reward comes in heaven. But also, Noach failed to make the world better. Years he was building the ark. Why did it take so long? Well, he had primitive tools. He was working alone. But the real reason was, God wanted him to go slow so that people will have a chance to ask him what this is all about, so he can explain to them that there's going to be a flood and they should get into the Teva. They should get into the ark. And in 120 years, he didn't convince a single person to come with him into the ark. In his favor, you always have to find Alimut Schus. It could be that he didn't convince anyone to get into the ark with him because he himself did not believe that God would actually bring a flood. Out of goodness of heart, he couldn't believe that God would punish the people so severely because he didn't think they deserved such a severe punishment. And to some degree, that's true of all the Nevi'im, all the prophets in Torah. Nobody listened to them. Those who prophesied the Churban, the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, the exile, nobody listened. And it could be also because the Navi himself didn't believe it. He was obligated to say it, because a Navi has to deliver his Navua. So he went and he said it. But deep down, he didn't think, destroy a Beis HaMikdash. It wasn't realistic or convincing to them. And so when they said it, it didn't ring with urgency or whatever, so that the people were able to ignore it. But the fact is that he didn't save anybody except himself and his family. So he himself was not good for earth, and therefore he didn't deserve to collect the reward of all the others. So what do we see here? There are bigger sins and there are smaller sins. And yet, the sins that affect earth, even if they're smaller, are more damaging than the sins that affect heaven. The sins that affect your neshama are more severe than the sins that affect your body or your nefesh habahamis, and yet the sins that affect your body are more serious, because the purpose of creation is the physical, not the spiritual. So what makes earth better, what brings the world to its purpose, is more crucial than heavenly concerns. And that might explain why Pikuach Nefesh is Deiche almost every sin. If it's a matter of life and death, You eat treif, you eat on Yom Kippur, you work on Shabbos, you do whatever it takes to save the life. Why is life more important than the mitzvah? If you look at it more deeply, you really can't separate. It's not a real distinction. Like the Gemara says, why do we violate Shabbos in order to save a life? Huh?
It's to live with the Torah. So you could keep it on the Shabbos.
The Torah is saying, violate this Shabbos and keep the man alive so that he will be able to observe many Shabbosim. So are we violating Shabbos in order to save a life?
No. In order to save Shabbos?
We're violating Shabbos for the sake of Shabbos. So we're not violating Shabbos at all. We're protecting Shabbos by keeping the person alive so that he will be able to observe many Shabbosim. So it's out of respect for Shabbos that you violate a Shabbos. So it's not really putting life above the mitzvah. It's because when you have life, then you can do the mitzvah. If you don't have life, you can't do the mitzvah. So it's hard to separate which is more important, physical life or the mitzvah. Well, how can you decide what's more important when you can't do one without the other? But in concept, the physical takes precedent over the spiritual, because the purpose of creation is the physical, not the spiritual. The purpose of creation is not your nefesh elikis. Your godly soul doesn't need creation. It's godly before creation. It remains godly during creation. It'll be godly after Mashiach comes. It has nothing to, it's not dependent on creation at all. In fact, for the godly soul to come down into creation is a painful and distasteful affair. It doesn't want. Bal korchoch atachai, you live against your will, against your godly soul. The purpose of creation is the animal soul. That the animal soul should have an opportunity to become godly, that's the purpose of creation. But the godly soul is already godly. You don't need creation for that. So on the one hand, you could say, damaging your godly soul is a horrible offense. Corrupting your animal soul, your animal soul is corrupt by nature anyway, so how much damage is there? And that's true. But that's just if you compare two souls. But if you're thinking about the purpose of creation, here the animal soul takes on a significance that the godly soul doesn't have. So there will be times when you sacrifice your godly soul for something physical. Like a famous mashpia in Lubavitch was in the middle of saying the Shema, and he noticed one of the yeshiva boys walked past him with torn boots. The bottoms of the boots were coming off. And he called the administrator of the yeshiva who was next sitting next to him, and he said, make sure you get a new pair of boots for the boy. So the administrator said to him, you're in the middle of Shema. Why are you interrupting? You're not allowed to speak in the middle of the Shema. Saying Shema is Yehudi Iloh. It's the higher form of oneness of God. There's a lower level oneness and a higher level oneness. The Shema is the higher level oneness. Yehudi Iloh, one with God. So when the administrator said to him, you're not allowed to speak in the middle of Shema, it's Yehudi Iloh. So the Mashpia said, taking care of the boy's boots, that's Yehudi Iloh. So sometimes you sacrifice what is heavenly for something physical, and that's the real godliness. That's the real oneness of God. Going to heaven is not oneness of God. It's simply the ignoring earth. Bringing God down to earth, that's Achdus Hashem. That's Hashem Echad. Now, I just want to point out, you can talk about somebody else's boots in the middle of Shema, not your own. So if you notice that your boots are a little scruffed up or whatever, and you need to polish them, this is not a conversation you have in the middle of Shema. It's only somebody else's. So the second millennium, because they did care about each other's boots, that's why they did deserve a reward. The problem was that they didn't have the tools with which to collect that reward. So the other thing we see is like this. People do mitzvahs and it's magnificent and it's wonderful. Because every mitzvah, no matter what your motivation is, no matter what your degree of knowledge or understanding is, a mitzvah is awesome, divine, fantastic. But if you don't know, and you don't appreciate, and you don't understand what godliness is, what a godly soul is, what God's kavana and purpose in creation is, as you do the mitzvahs, you are fulfilling God's plan, but you're not collecting the reward. You have no idea. So sadly, there are people who do mitzvahs, and they do them well, and they do them consistently, and they do them religiously, and all they get from it is the feeling that they are better than somebody else. Holier than thou. More frum. Frum, frummer, frummest. Ultra frum. They get a feeling of satisfaction about themselves. I've done good. That's not the reward for a mitzvah. On the contrary, that just takes them more and more away, further and further from the ability to appreciate a mitzvah, because the more you're conscious of yourself, the less you're capable of appreciating godliness. So what we get from this sicha is, first of all, a clear picture of how Bein Adam L'Chaveri, what is good for earth, is more significant than what is good for heaven. And that in order to appreciate or get the reward for mitzvahs, for being good to each other, in order to appreciate the godliness of that, you have to have a little bit of sensitivity, a little bit of Edelkeit, so that you feel the godliness and get its reward. In today's world, we have, I think, a unique condition. We've never been so able to do good for others as we can today. With the mass media, with instant communication, we can do so much more for so many more people than was possible a generation ago. Back in the shtetl, how many people could you help? It was limited. And in what way can you help? That was limited too. You had your own problems. Feed the poor? You were poor yourself. So there was a very limited way, a very limited opportunity to help each other. Today, of course, that has skyrocketed. We can do so much, and for so many people. On the other hand, now that Chassidus has been revealed and translated and explained and developed for seven generations, we appreciate godliness, we understand God's intention, we understand the purpose of creation far better than our grandparents ever did. Even our scholarly grandparents. So we have an opportunity to bring together both virtues, an appreciation of godliness like never before, if you avail yourself of that information, and the ability to do good and to help each other in ways that was never possible before. So if we take advantage of these two things, like Avraham, we will make the world better, and we will gather up the reward for it, because we can appreciate the godliness of the mitzvah, not just its practical goodness. So without Chassidus, we understand the difference between good and bad, and we prefer the good over the bad, but we don't see the godly mitzvahs are goodly, but we don't see the godly. With Hasidus, with not only the learning of Hasidus, but even the character traits, the attitudes, even the practices, Hasidic customs, are meant to generate an appreciation of godliness. So by doing these things, we can not only fix the world, but enjoy the benefits as we do it, as we go about it. Yeah? Yeah, the ultimate reward is an Elam Haba, because today, as much as we appreciate the godliness, it's limited by our imagination. So if you understand more, you appreciate more. If you understand less, you appreciate less. So it's limited. In Elam Haba, it will be revealed for everyone.
But also according to how much the person is doing now?
No. How you behave now will affect how you experience heaven. But Olam Haba, there are no limits.
So heaven that you're talking about now. Heaven as we experience it now.
The heavenly.
If Akam was a leader of Chesed, how come he was in the millennium of Gevurah?
What's the question?
If Avram was the Midah of Chesed, how come he was during the millennia of Geburah, in the second part? And he refined the Chesed aspect.
Kabbalistic question. If the first 10 generations were the attribute of kindness, and Avraham was kindness, why didn't he belong or appear in the first 10 generations? Here's a Kabbalistic answer. It's a Kabbalistic question. The first 2,000 years are called 2,000 years of chaos. Shnei Alofim Tehu. Avraham actually belonged to the third millennium. Right, he was at the end of the second millennium. The world was in darkness for 2,000 years. Bo Avraham, when Avraham came around, hischil lohayir, the world started to brighten up. In other words, the difference between tayhu, chaos, and tikkun. Avraham was the beginning of tikkun. Tikkun means Chesed and Gvura can get along. The 2,000 years of chaos was either your Chesed or your Gvura, you can't be both. That's the world of Tehu. In a world of chaos, there's no cooperation. There's no harmony. Avraham started to introduce harmony by being Chesed after the Gvura. In spite of the Gevurah, whatever. So Avraham combined Chesed and Gevurah.
Isn't that Teferis?
And Teferis is the beginning of Tikkun, or the essence of Tikkun. So when did we need Avraham? Not in the 2,000 years of kindness. Huh? Kindness was 1,000 years of Tehu, and then there was 1,000 years of Gvura, which was Tehu, because they wouldn't combine. They were exclusionary.
Chesed of
Chesed. So what was the third millennium, as long as we're talking about history? The third thousand years was the attribute of compassion or beauty, because harmony is beautiful. Beauty is created out of harmony. So the third thousand years, like from the year 2001 until the year 3000, that was the year, or the millennium in which the Torah was given. Avraham began with the first mitzvah, and the world started to become beautiful. And that is a reflection of the third day of creation. What happened on the third day of creation? Huh? The earth that was ugly and colorless was suddenly covered with vegetation, with plants, flowers, color. It became beautiful. And it started to produce fruit. The trees produced fruit. The earth produced the grass. God said, "Let the earth give forth." In other words, this is the first time that you had some productivity. On the first day, God said, "Let there be light." There was light. "Let there be a separation between the waters. There was separation. The first time that there was a production, the earth produced the grass. So the earth was starting to become productive. And in the spiritual sense, when the Torah was given, when Avraham came around, human beings started to be productive. The world started to produce its fruit, revealing its potential, living up to its potential.
So that was... Like, you have to have a generation the same way when the world was created, you have to have the first two in order to have the third. It's almost like you couldn't have been, I mean, it couldn't have been any other way, but.
So in our lives also, we have childhood, which is chaotic. There's no harmony. When the child's upset, he's upset. When he's happy, and the two cannot mix. There's no balance, right? And then you get a little older and you start to... The same is even true in the course of a day. You start your day with Meida Ani, you're not fully functional yet. And that's why you can say Meida Ani before you wash your Neglevas, because it's a chaotic... Then as you daven, as you start your day, as you start... And you move into the Teferis stage.
Seems like so, that's when all the chaos happens. The morning is fine, nothing happens.
That's when you face the chaos, not you are the chaos. Unless you are the chaos, but that's specific. You have a choice. So which millennium are we in today? From the year 5001 is the sixth millennium, which is Friday. What was the attribute of Friday? What happened on the sixth day of creation? Tzaddik was created. Tzaddik Yesod Olam. The foundation of the world is the Tzaddik. Tzaddik was created on Friday. And what happened to that tzaddik?
He messed up.
Can a tzaddik sin?
Fall seven times.
Huh?
Can fall seven times.
So what happened on Friday, a tzaddik did tshuva, and then Shabbos came. That's the sixth millennium. The sixth millennium is, we are now tzaddikim. From all our past lives, we've achieved the status of tzaddikim. And yet, we have to do tshuva. And the neshama is a tzaddik. Because the neshama has accumulated, you know. But in our daily life, we need to do tshuva. To put it mildly. And as soon as we do tshuva, it becomes Shabbos. Mashiach comes. So we are not only in the sixth millennium, we're not only in Friday, we're in Friday afternoon. Because the year 5,500 was noon. We're in the year 5,700. So it's past noon. So it's Erev Shabbos, like urgent. And of course, you know, life, like you say, on Friday, things go crazy. The pressure, the tasks that have to get done, and it's too much, and we go. So it's a chaotic time, but it's all good. So the sixth millennium is a reflection of the sixth day. We are tzaddikim, but we're doing tshuva. And that's what the Zohar says, that before Mashiach comes, or Mashiach will cause tzaddikim to do tshuva. How did tzaddikim do tshuva? What do they do tshuva for? So it's not like they were tzaddikim, but then they lost it, and they became bad, and now they have to do tshuva. Tzaddikim don't lose it. So the only explanation is that our neshamas are tzaddikim. We have the neshama of a tzaddik, but we have the lifestyle of a Baal Tshuva. So that's bringing together both virtues, which is again what we're saying before. We have the soul of a tzaddik, our heavenly condition is good. We also have the opportunity to fix the world by doing tshuva. Because tshuva really repairs even the ugliest parts of the world. So by having this combination, we have...
I thought it means growing from level to level.
Huh?
I thought it meant that tzaddik does tshuva means that they're always growing, they're always growing, elevating.
A tzaddik also is always growing.
That's what I'm talking about.
So the Baal Tshuva is a dramatic growth. Whereas a tzaddik is an incremental growth. A tzaddik gets better day by day. A Baal Tshuva gets better dramatically, like from 0 to 60. That we're in contact with some ugly things that a tzaddik never contacts. And if we do tshuva, we can fix even that. He was ashamed. I mean, he didn't like confess publicly, so we don't know about. But the Torah says that he was told, "The day you eat from it, you'll die." Did he die the day he ate from it?
No.
Huh? He didn't.
Weren't they banned from Gan Eden?
Yeah, but that was not the. The warning was that you're going to die, not that you're going to be banned. So why didn't he die that day? Because he did tshuva. So God changed the day from a human day to a divine day. What's a divine day? 1,000 years. So he lived for 1,000 years. Except that he gave away 70 years. To David. So only Chava lived to be 1,000 years. So I think, as far as I know, Chava was the oldest person ever. Nobody else lived 1,000 years. But not 1,000. One more thing about Tayach. Why are the seven mitzvahs that all human beings are obligated to fulfill, why are they called mitzvahs b'nei noyach? Now, practically speaking, because the people in the world today are all b'nei noyach. That's who survived. But six of those seven mitzvahs were given to Adam and Chava. Only one really belongs to Noach. Of course, after the flood, God repeated all seven, repeated the six, and then added the seventh. But still, it doesn't explain why it would be called Noach's mitzvahs when they were really 1,000 years older than Noach. So the possible explanation is the mitzvahs after the flood are radically different than the mitzvahs before the flood. So even the six mitzvahs that were given to Adam and Chava did not remain the same. When they were repeated to Noach, they underwent a dramatic change because the world was different. The mitzvahs that Adam and Chava kept were mitzvahs in kind of a Gan Eden style life. It wasn't the world as we know it. When were mitzvahs performed in a real world, so to speak? After the flood, when people lived to be 120. In that real world, even the first six mitzvahs were different. They became earthy. They started to affect the earth more. Not to the degree at Matan Torah, but the world was more worldly, so the mitzvahs had an effect on the world. So all seven of the mitzvahs are really b'nei noyach mitzvahs because they're in a noyach world, not in a Gan Eden world of Adam and Chava. Like one of the commandments is not to commit adultery. What do you say to Adam and Chava? Don't commit adultery. Huh? Snake? It's a different sin. So when Adam and Chava were told, don't commit adultery, they said, okay, that's easy. What else? Obviously, it meant something different to them than it does to us.
But also, as they have children,
then it's incest.
No, but I'm saying in the children.
They shouldn't, yeah.
Yeah, as a generation.
Yeah, yeah. So it was really given for their children, right? So they would be called Sheish Mitzvahs B'nei Adam. But we're saying that Adam represents 1,000 years, Noach represents 1,000 years. So there's the Adam world, the Adam generation, and there's the Noach generation. In Noach's world, these mitzvahs became real. So they weren't the same as before. Even though it's the same commandment, it was a different quality. Possibly. As a preparation for Mashiach, it's interesting, the Baal Shem Tov came along. And what did the Baal Shem Tov say? Just very briefly and very superficially. The Baal Shem Tov said, God is creating the world constantly, and you should love your fellow Jew. You see? A better relationship with God and a better relationship with people. That combination, that's how we really fix the world permanently, thoroughly, deeply. To be continued. Yeah.
This dichotomy between your relationship with God and your relationship with others seems a little false to me. Because isn't the whole reason, if you really take it back to its source, that we should be good to others and that we are good to others because of Hashem?
Oh. That's a good point. Of course we do mitzvahs, like tzedakah, and hospitality, and because we're told by God to do it. But what are we told to do? A mitzvah? See, this is a very important point. When it says love your fellow Jew, is that a mitzvah? In order to do that mitzvah, you actually have to love a Jew. It's not just a mitzvah, right? It's not. So if you love a Jew because it's a mitzvah, who are you loving? Do you actually love? So what the mitzvah is saying is that you should actually feel for another person. If you don't feel for the other person, even though you're doing the mitzvah, you're not. I asked this Froom guy, do you love your fellow Jew? He says, of course. I said, what do you mean, of course? What do you mean, of course? Of course not. It's not easy to love Jews. Right? I'm talking about all Jews. I'm talking about just more than four. What do you mean, of course? What he meant was, look, I'm a religious Jew. What kind of question? Ask me if I put on tefillin. Of course I put on tefillin. It's a mitzvah. Do I have Avos Yisrael? Of course, it's a mitzvah. So in other words, you have no Avos Yisrael. You don't actually like Jews. That's why, sadly, many people interpret love your fellow Jew to mean Jews of your choice. So pick a few Jews to love and just love them. Your fellow Jew. Whoever you consider your fellow, love them. If they're not your fellow Jew, you don't have to love them. So it's a good point that why divide them into two categories if they're all the same mitzvahs? Because what you're doing is different. Of course you're doing it because God said so. But what are you doing? Not just doing what God says. You're feeling for the person. Because if you don't, that's not what he said. He didn't say, do me a favor and love your fellow Jew. He said, do your fellow Jew a favor. That's the mitzvah.
So in the second millennium, when they were feeling for another, but God was completely removed from the picture, that's deserving of a reward. Why?
Because it makes the world better. And since that's God's primary kavana, to make the world better. So first of all, you deserve to be in the world. You're making it better.
So the love itself makes the world? What's making the world better?
The cooperation.
But if God's removed from that, I mean, I don't understand. The whole idea is bringing Godliness into the world. So
yes.
What's the Godliness in the love?
It's like the theme of all the Sheva mitzvahs is to make the world inhabitable. And when people get along, life is livable. The world is inhabitable. When people don't get along, you can't live. So life on Earth becomes unbearable. So at the very least, the Sheva Mitzvahs, before we get to godliness, from Torah and Har Sinai, even before Torah, life has to be livable. The world has to be civilized, not a jungle.
So that sounds like a precursor for bringing godliness into the world, not
sure.
Godliness itself.
Sure.
So loving your fellow Jew for the sake of the Jew isn't bringing godliness into the world?
Now it is.
But just because it's nice.
So that's like Derech Eretz Kodmo L'Torah. Wait a minute, Derech Eretz is Torah, no? Same question. Mm-hmm. Gute Nacht.